You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The Giants are heading east soon, south and east soon for spring training. Very exciting time for baseball fans everywhere. So let's catch up with Chris Haft and talk about certain segments of the team maybe that we should be keeping our eye on. I'm Allison Footer. Chris, I want to talk about the outfielders today. I guess let's start with Hunter Pence. And he's an interesting guy because he's a fabulous baseball player, of course. He is a team leader. But also the fortunes of the Giants really largely rest on him, because when he's not healthy and not in the lineup, they're not very good. And when he is healthy, they're pretty good. So they really need a full, healthy season from Hunter Pence.
Allison, they definitely do. There's no other way to really state it. He doesn't have to play. I don't think he has to play 162 games as he used to do almost routinely. But if he can get in at least 130, 140 games, it'll make a big difference in their season. It's a cliche, but he's a leader on the field and a leader off the field. There are certain guys who are good for a team even when they're not playing. It's usually like a veteran pitcher, a Jake Peavy type of guy who, understands winning and understands the culture of winning and can, motivate guys, point them in the right direction, in that way or form. But a guy like Hunter, I think, needs to be out there because he also leads by example. So to not have him on the field, it's almost crippling to the club.
Yeah, how do you explain Hunter Pence to somebody who doesn't know anything about him? So, when he was here in Houston, so intense, the most intense player, one of the most intense players I've ever been around. He would, he'd come to the ballpark, really early, and he'd want to take, 500 swings off the tee. His hitting coaches would have to sort of, ban him from the hitting cage, from the batting cages, try to make him pace himself a little bit. But he always said, when he relaxes a little bit, he's not as effective. He has to play angry. And you've been covering baseball a really long time. As far as just, basic raw intensity, would he rank up there in, the top five of all time players you've covered?
Yes. Yes. Offhand, I can think of a few people who are like him. Because, this is a game, as you know, Allison, this is a game where you kind of have to relax. It's a state of readiness and relaxation at the same time. You've got to be loose. You see guys between pitches blow bubbles. It's that kind of game. You don't see people in football and basketball blow, maybe basketball a little bit, but pro football, they're not blowing bubbles between plays. Baseball, yes, leisurely, but at the same time, accelerate and re-accelerate in spurts and fits and starts. So a guy like Hunter Pence, that's why a guy like Hunter Pence gets hurt, because, guys like him, you're standing there for five innings, all of a sudden you got to chase the ball down the right field line or something. That's tough physically to go from 0 to 60. And Hunter's been one of the best at doing that, but, you have to wonder whether he's, his body is starting to betray him, i.e. getting a little too old for that sort of thing, or if it's just been a series of bad luck injuries, fluke injuries, which to some extent it has been.
Yeah, I always think of this conversation that we had with Phil Garner when he was managing the Astros. This was about 10 years ago, and I think it was during the playoffs even. And he said, look what we expect these hitters to do. Okay, so remember to do this, remember to do this. And they tell them all kinds of things. And they get up to the plate, okay, clear your head. Don't think about anything. That's asking. I mean, we don't appreciate how really hard it is to be a hitter in the major league. It's asking a lot, though. It doesn't even make any sense what they're supposed to be doing up there.
I played high school baseball. It doesn't care to what these guys go through. They've got to make a split second decision with the pitch and all that. It's you just have to try and be as natural as possible. There's this story about Yogi Berra that took place after he retired, and he was trying to give some, or whoever he was with, the Yankees or Mets at the time, they're trying to give some younger players some hitting advice. And he started to talk about his wrists and his hands and all of that, and just couldn't make himself clear. So finally he jumped into the batting cage himself, and he said, just watch me, if you can make it come that naturally, that's great. And I think that's what every hitter shoots for.
Yeah, and that's a reason why there's only a couple hundred guys that can do this at any given time in a baseball season. Okay, moving over to center field, an Arts fan. I mean, there's not really a whole lot of, I don't know, like things to watch with him. A good, solid player I think he was new to the Giants last year, and just a good contributor, correct?
Yeah, he's at the start of the year for most of the year, actually. Also, he still felt the effects of, I think he had three surgeries in a nine-month stretch there before he joined the Giants. So he was still healing. Now, I expect him to be, I think everybody expects him to be, the kind of guy, everybody's at least hoping for him to be the kind of guy he was in Washington. Mm-hmm. Just a real dynamo there at the top of the order, going and getting almost everything in center field. He made some good, really good plays, eye-popping plays later in the season, which showed that, he was recovering. So I think they're looking for more of that from him. And I think it's partly why they signed him a three-year deal, because they figured, well, maybe in year two and year three, we'll get the real Denard Stand. So let's sit back and watch and see.
So how's left field going to shake out?
That's a real good question. I wouldn't be surprised if they engineer some sort of trade during spring training. I mean, that's always a possibility. Right now, though, General Manager Bobby Evans told us the other day that he wants to he's hoping that it'll just be one player who secures a job. It won't be a platoon. People were thinking platoon because Jared Parker is left-handed and Mac Williamson hits right-handed. But it sounds like they want to try and create an environment where one guy wins the job and the other guy goes to the bench or AAA, and probably the bench. It'll deepen the bench a little bit more, I think, if they kept the quote-unquote loser of the competition, up in the bigs, and maybe could also stimulate the guy who wins the job to stay on his toes. So, but that's what's going to happen, and I think if things fail, if somebody really accomplished drops into the Giants' lap via trade or free agency, they'll consider it.
Okay, interesting stuff. Always good. Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it. Padres are getting ready to head to spring training, and Padres fans can look forward to a very young and interesting team to pay attention to in 2017. Talk to AJ Casavell about some of those players. I'm Allison Futter. AJ, I want to quickly just move through the outfield, and it seems to be not really set. They could maybe add somebody, probably not a starter. But can you just give us a rundown on who you think the three starting outfielders will be, and maybe who the options are for the fourth and fifth guys?
Yeah, they haven't really talked much about adding a starter, which kind of surprised me based on where they were at the beginning of the offseason. They had some interest in bringing back John Jay before he went to Chicago. But I think the Padres are leaning toward essentially having four young outfielders split playing time among three spots. None of the guys that are returning. I think Alex Dickerson had the most plate appearances in a season last year, and it was around 350 or so, or it might even be less than that. And so none of the guys that are returning have a ton of experience in the outfield, and I don't think they necessarily want to throw them into a 650 plate appearance type season. So if they can kind of split playing time between four young outfielders for three spots, that would be their goal right now. It looks like Travis Jankowski and Alex Dickerson will be back, and Hunter Renfro pretty much has right field all but locked up after his pretty incredible Pacific Coast League season last year. And then once he made it to the major leagues, his week and a half where he just crushed the ball. The fourth outfielder right now looks like Manuel Margot has that spot. There's a school of thought that would say, hey, maybe we keep him in AAA, get him some more seasoning, get another year of team control down the road. But as it stands right now, the Padres don't have a backup center fielder, so he would appear to be that guy. And then you kind of split playing time among those four and have Christian Bethencourt, who right now is serving as a kind of do-everything catcher, pitcher, outfield hybrid as the fifth guy, maybe pinch hitter off the bench you can fill in one of the corner outfield spots. So right now it looks like splitting time among four guys and then Christian Bethencourt sprinkled in here and there.
Okay, so this I find kind of troublesome, to be honest with you. And I get where they're going with that. And I get that they can't expect 650 plate appearances from any single, outfielders with these young guys. Then you have an even younger guy that's sort of sprinkled in as a backup and somebody who, get some playing time. And with Margot, I don't know. I mean, is that like the best thing for him? Because it's, when it comes to guys that they sort of think are going to be future starters, stars, whatever you want to call them, there's so many expectations with him down the road. Giving him a part-time position, I mean, that rarely works. And so, and my other question is, what happens if, like, more than one guy starts burying himself and he's like 0 for 34, 2 for 45, and it just kind of snowballs from there? There's really not a veteran guy who, like a true veteran guy who can just like step in and maybe play 10 games in a row. That's got to be a little worrisome for the Padres.
Oh, it definitely is. And I think they're kind of taking the gamble going into 2017 that on the school of thought that hopefully maybe two or three of our outfielders all don't slump at the same time, and it's baseball, so you know that that's going to happen maybe once or twice during the year. They have four young outfielders, and we know young hitters are prone to going through slumps. I mean, just look at what happened with Alex Dickerson last season. He was fantastic all of July, and then you get to August, he kind of injures his hip a little bit in a warning track collision. He won't necessarily say it, but that affected his swing, and he had to keep playing because the Padres didn't have a ton of outfield depth at the time. And so an extra presence wouldn't hurt, especially an extra presence who could maybe play some center field, sell Travis Jankowski, give Margot a little bit more time in the minors. Although, for everyone I've talked to, Manny Margot is very close to being big league ready. Certainly is on the defensive side. He's a line drive type bat. The Padres really want to see what they have in him and what they have in Renfro. So I get the need to want to play these young guys and maybe not take at bats away from them. But at the same time, there needs to be some sort of stability in there. And that's why I kind of thought at the beginning of the offseason they might bring in someone. Certainly not a starter, because I think they like their outfield mix maybe for the top three guys. But just someone to bring some stability, someone like John Jay they had last year.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's essential. Okay, so now that I've been Debbie Downer, now I'm going to look a little more optimistically. And I would say that if I had to, you know, place a hefty bet or put my integrity on the line or something else that I really care about, I would say that there's a pretty good chance that Manny Margot will actually be a starting outfielder at some point in the season, probably in the second half, maybe toward the end. Would that be an accurate prognostication?
Yeah, it might even be sooner than that. I mean, I've heard he's pretty much big league ready at this point, and from everything I've seen of him, he hits line drives almost exclusively. He's not a power guy, but if he puts one in the gap, he can get three bases like it's nothing. And his defense is second to none. The Padres have an interesting conundrum in center field because Travis Jankowski and Manny Margot are two of the rangiest center fielders I think in baseball. So I think. Manny Margot will be a starter at some point this year, and Padre fans have a lot to look forward to in that regard because he's an exciting young player.
Yeah, so I guess looking at the way that the outfield could be configured and just the way that there's so many young hitters that are going to be on this team, whether they're ready or not, it's a big responsibility for a hitting coach and for the manager. But I imagine that the hitting coach really has to be perfect at his job. And that does not mean turning all these guys into star hitters. It means keeping their heads on straight, making sure that they're able to mentally grind through a six-month season where not everything may go so well for them. This is kind of where, I mean, you know, a hitting coach for a veteran team, it's not like he's not valuable, but guys know what they're doing by the time they get to him. So the Padres hitting coach probably has quite a task ahead of him.
Yeah, and I think, if you look at the job that Mark McGuire and Alan Zinner have in front of them this year, a lot of it, we can kind of glean what they did last season. Last year in April and May, the Padres, their on-base percentage was dreadful. And they really, really worked with the guys at recognizing strikes and honing the strike zone. And it went up. It didn't go up a ton, but their recognition of the strike zone got better as the season progressed. And I think that's a big thing with these young hitters, especially a guy like Hunter Renfro, who the knock on him has always been pitch recognition, strike zone recognition, staying in the strike zone. Because if he can force pitchers to throw pitches in the strike zone, he's going to hit them over the Western Metal Building like he did last year. So the biggest challenge isn't necessarily with some of these swings. I'm not necessarily a swing expert, but the biggest challenge is when you're dealing with 22, 23, 24, 25-year-old hitters is between the ears and the grind of an entire baseball season.
Okay, good stuff, AJ. Thank you. Appreciate it. Talk to you next time. The Diamondbacks have some work cut out for them as they head to spring training, desperately trying to make sure that 2016 is not repeated, quite frankly. So lots of optimism going into 2017. Let's talk to Steve Gilbert about all of that. I'm Allison Footer. Steve, I want to focus on the outfield. I just kind of want to break that down a little bit. I look at the names. Tomas doesn't really thrill me, as we've been discussing for a couple of years now. But overall, I sort of like the way that the outfield shakes out. And can you talk a little bit of just the individual players and maybe who the backup, the fourth or fifth outfielders might be?
Yeah, sure, Allison. I think that, you know, Yasmani Tomas has definitely struggled, to get back to what you said there. He's definitely struggled defensively. Hitting wise, you know, he has shown power, which is valuable, and it's certainly a guy that looks like he's going to be in the starting lineup come opening day for them. So the question will always be with him is, you know, does he hit enough to offset some of what he gives up on defense? When you look at who's going to be a backup in the outfield, you know, they've got some non-roster guys that they're going to bring to camp to kind of compete. They recently signed Gregor Blanco. He's a guy that fits a need that they have as far as having another left-hander possibly coming off the bench. He can play all three outfield positions, probably better on the corners than he is in center, but he can play center. So I think that could make him pretty valuable. You've got Socrates Brito, who is ranked by MLB Pipeline as the number one prospect in the organization. He's another guy, had some injury issues last year, but he made the team after a great spring training. He can play all three outfield positions and is a left-handed bat, so he's somebody else that could see some time as a fourth or fifth outfielder. Jeremy Hazelbaker is another guy that they got from the Cardinals during the offseason, and he's another one of those front-runner guys that could see some time as a fourth outfielder. Another, again, probably not coincidentally, left-handed hitter that gives them another lefty off the bench, which, again, is something that they've been kind of lacking.
Yeah, so Pollock is obviously almost like – it's almost like making an off-season acquisition, right? So that was such a huge loss last year. So being able to start with him being healthy, getting a full season of him, that just, like, solves half their problems anyway out there.
It really does, because not only offensively where, you know what the numbers have been that he's put up, but defensively he's such an outstanding defender, and losing him last year – really kind of set off they also had traded Ender Inciarte during the offseason. So that when Pollock went down, that really left them without a true center fielder. And that's why Socrates Brito was out there. They moved Chris Owings, who had never played there at the professional level, out to center field. And he did a better job than people expected, but still was asking a lot of a guy 2 days before the start of the regular season to play the outfield for the first time. So definitely Pollock is a key part to that. Getting David Peralta back, he's another guy that had a couple of injuries last year and missed really big portions of the season. Whether they play him in left or right, depending on what they do with Tomas, he's another guy that is a decent defender and brings at least a pretty good bat to the lineup as well.
So did I see a recent interview that Derek Hall did? I think it was maybe a radio interview. And forgive me for not being more well-versed on this, but he said he was kind of addressing the way that the front office was configured last year and all the changes that were made. And he said something along the lines of there might have been too many cooks in the kitchen and they needed to simplify things on that side. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes. Yeah, he did say that. I think it was one of those things. And Dave Stewart made some comments as well to our own Bill Ladson with MLB.com about just the layers of decision-making that went on inside that front office, because it wasn't a typical alignment per se, because you had Tony La Russa kind of at the top there of the baseball operations department. You know, he reported to Derek and Ken Kendrick. You had Dave Stewart as a GM reporting to Tony, and Dijon Watson was also a senior vice president, and he was involved in some of those things. So it really, there was a lot of different layers, and maybe it seems like now it's a lot more streamlined because it's Mike Hazen at the top of the baseball operations department reporting to Derek, and he's got his people below him, but there's not that extra added layer there or extra people at the same level as say, Mike Hazen.
Yeah, it always kind of surprises me when teams try to go outside the box too much and, so to speak, reinvent the wheel. But so many things just don't work. And it's almost like teams are determined to make their mark and doing something that nobody else has done. And there's probably reasons why other people aren't doing it. Maybe it doesn't work out so well. So was this maybe a humbling experience for the Diamondbacks to sort of come back down and say we need to be maybe a little bit more conventional with how we do things?
Well, I think it certainly was. I think they certainly recognized last year that that something had to change, that the way things were going. So certainly when you have a season where you lose 93 games, it's certainly humbling in a lot of different ways, and especially coming on the heels of having a poor 2014 where they had the worst record in baseball. So two of the last 3 years have been not good, to say the least, for them. So I think that was very those were humbling experiences in the sense that they knew some changes had to be made, and bringing in a guy like Mike Hazen at his stature and giving him kind of free rein to run the baseball operations department is certainly a result of that.
Okay, good stuff. Always interesting. Steve, thank you.
Allison, always my pleasure.
You never really know what's going to get the fans all riled up as we're in our final stages before spring training. And apparently, shades of purple are a big topic of conversation out there in Colorado. Let's talk to Thomas Harding about that. I'm Allison Fitter. Thomas, okay, so the Rockies have slightly adjusted, if I have this correct, the shade of purple that their uniforms will be, and you've been getting quite a reaction from the story you wrote, so tell us about that.
Yes, and this is something that throughout their history, and definitely throughout the time that I've been around here, I've been here since 2000, and that may have been the year that they added the purple alternate jersey. That purple shows up different ways on different things. I even asked that they use a different shade of purple for their jersey than they use in the pinstripes of the jersey. And also you look at batting gloves and catcher's gear, and there are all these weird shades of purple. Sometimes you'd look on television and the uniform looked blue. So what the Rockies finally did after years of people complaining about it or asking them about it is they went in and I guess had their researchers find the exact shade of purple that would show up the same way on the alternate jersey or on the pinstripes in the jersey or on the hat, like in the bill of the hat or the one purple hat they hardly ever wear. And hopefully it shows up the same on batting gloves and catcher's gear. So it doesn't look like when you're watching it that they just all went to different sporting goods stores and bought stuff. But yeah, the fans, there was quite the reaction to it. I ran the story. I even shot my own picture of the two jerseys, the one from last year and the one from this year. And, you know, I'm not Walter Yost or Ansel Adams. So some of the fans, when they saw my picture, they thought that the Rockies had gone to some shade of lilac. It's not quite that. So on Twitter, I've been explaining the difference here, and there are a couple of sites like there's the Chris Creamer uniform site. He does the history of uniforms in every sport. I mean, it's great. He even goes down to the minor leagues and defunct leagues. But he actually found the color number. There's a color number done by Pantone that governs all colors. And he found the two color numbers and put up the logos side by side. But yeah, we've been talking about that all day. I mean, you know, usually we're more concerned about the guys wearing the purple, but now that they've finally gotten their purple straight, that seems to be an exciting conversation. I guess when you're a couple of weeks before spring training, then, you know, you're ready to talk anything about baseball, even if it's a shade of purple.
Okay, so the basic premise of this is that they just wanted continuity. They wanted to just settle on one and stop having all of these variations of purple. It's more like let's just focus on the fact that this is our purple and not stray from that.
Right. Well, the weird thing is they actually didn't stray before. It was they used the same purple on everything. It's just that same color, if you put it on the material that made the hat, it looked different than if you put it on the material that made the shirt or the material on their printed schedules. I mean, it really was a crazy thing. And I've known about these things before where it's hard to find the exact thing that will transfer to everything. But they believe they finally have it now. They finally have a purple that purple is purple is purple. It's one of the big controversies, I guess, of this offseason.
So I'm guessing that the controversy is more because people aren't really understanding that, what you just explained to me, and they're just hearing the Rockies are changing their colors.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason why I did the story, just to let people know there hasn't been a change. It's just that as the gentleman I talked to in retail with the Rockies, what he was saying was, purple is so much their identity that it's kind of hard to see it show up different ways. And in some ballparks, even with the lighting in some ballparks, some places it looks more purple than others. So if they found something that works, that looks the same all the way through, I think it just makes things a little bit cleaner. And that's all they really wanted to do. They weren't trying to get the fans, oh, my gosh, I'm going to have to throw away everything I own because Rocky's purple has changed to some weird Rocky's lilac or something. The colors aren't that much different, but it's a fun thing to talk about here at the end of January.
Yeah, this isn't a marketing ploy, which is what most teams do when they change their uniforms and their colors. It's really just to sell jerseys. And I know years that I covered the Astros, they purposely picked up brick red as their color when they moved into the new ballpark. And it was basically because you had to buy an Astros shirt to have brick red. You can't just go to, you know, your local Target and just go to the brick red section. They don't have that. It's an odd color.
That was an odd one to me. That was an odd one because, you know, you had Astros and you thought about outer space and all that other stuff. And then they go to something where they actually look like the Diamondbacks. And the Diamondbacks, it made sense because you blend into a ballpark. I mean, I joked at that time that when they went to that, they called it Sedona Red, but it's the same color. But it was the same color as their infield. And the guys could have just kind of gotten on their bellies and slid to their positions, then popped up and no one would have known it, you know. But it made more sense for the Diamondbacks. Also, I don't understand teams that would move into a new park where you have so much merchandise involved with the park. Or say they get an All-Star game, there's merchandise involved with that. And then you change your uniform at the same time. I mean, if you really wanted to grab people's money, you wait until a year after that, and then you start changing your colors.
Yeah, that's a good point. The Rockies, though,
I'll give it to them. They're the only team that wears purple as their regular uniform. The Diamondbacks re-added a throwback to their early days, and I was looking through some of the stuff I have. The only other team that could claim purple in its history, believe it or not, is the Giants. Around 1914-17 or 14-16, they wore violet. They actually had checkered uniforms that had violet checkers back then. I'd like to see that come back.
No, I would not. But, that's interesting. I never would have.
Well, they no longer have Pablo Sandoval. Now, Pablo Sandoval in violet checkers, maybe that would be too much. But I'd like to see it otherwise.
That's a good one, Thomas. Okay, you know what? I'm not asking you about anything else because I think that's a perfect way to end our podcast. So thank you very much for this enlightened conversation.
Well, thanks for having me as I've given you a dissertation on the enlightened purple. Maybe that's what they should call it. The Colorado Rockies in enlightened purple.
Enlightened purple. That'll be, you can patent that and then you can retire.
All
right. Thanks, Thomas.
Thank you.
The Dodgers have renovated their baseball academy in the Dominican Republic, where the hotbed of talent has a little bit of an upgrade as they develop into major league players. Talk to Ken Gernick about that. I'm Allison Footer. Ken, you were down in the Dominican, and so you saw the dedication of an academy that was there but needed some upkeep. This is a pretty big deal for the Dodgers. It sounds like they put a lot of money into it, and there were a lot of dignitaries there to dedicate it.
All true, and you have to remember that 30 years ago, when I was there, when they launched it to begin with, they had the first academy of all the American team, major league teams that were there. And in 30 years, it played a very large role in developing the talent that helped them become a winner. And it fell in disrepair over the last 10 years. In the meantime, other teams caught up, built their own. And so the shift in kind of an arms race for the Latin players in Caribbean, which the Dodgers owned more or less for a very long time, they fell behind. And in new management, Guggenheim management, they want to reclaim that position, at least be on an even footing, if not get back the lead. And so they have renovated the complex, and they've done it with a lot of thought, spent a lot of money. They didn't level the old one. They actually restored and expanded the old one. So it retains the kind of campus-like feel that they actually patterned after Dodgertown and Vero Beach. But it's all state-of-the-art, brand new. And along with that comes the kind of new mentality that they're using, and that they not only, and they say it, but it's more than just say it, because I kind of witnessed it. They want to develop these players, but they want to develop them as people too. And so they're giving them classroom instruction. not taught by coaches, but by taught by teachers and professors on how to balance a checkbook, how to speak English. And so it's kind of a well-rounded program, which includes better dietary plans and nutrition. And I got to say, having seen it in the beginning and having seen it about 10 years ago and see it now, it's pretty impressive what they have done and what they plan to do.
Yeah, I've seen a couple of the academies there, and they used to have a lot of them in Venezuela. Most of those have since closed, and most teams moved over to the Dominican if they didn't have facilities there already. And like you said, I want to talk a little bit more about your point about it's more than just baseball training. This is training in life, and what we tend to forget as American-born people and fans is that it is not easy to make that transition. So you're a young ball player, you come over to the United States, don't speak any English, you have a ton of money thrown at you, and superstardom status. So much for people, for these young guys to endure. And so to really have English classes and, like you said, like balancing checkbooks, just to know how to make good decisions, to be able to, I guess, prepare for the people that want to kind of get in your life that maybe you need to be a little bit on guard. And so it's really, like, I would think a lot of the day is really spent more in a classroom. And a part of that, of course, is playing baseball, but it's really a pretty even thing. And I would think that a lot of players really benefit from that.
Right, and you certainly got that tone at the ceremony from the words of Commissioner Rob Manfred, from the words of Dodger Chairman Mark Walter and CEO Stan Kasten. This is not just about baseball. And, you know, they also began the ceremony with a moment of silence for the two ballplayers that were lost in auto accidents recently, and you know there's a tie in there, because I know that not only the Dodgers but all major league teams have a lot of valuable talent down there, and they need these players to kind of understand that there's a lot of responsibility that comes with being a major league player, not only to yourself and to your family but to your teammates and your organization. You have to handle yourself professionally, and you know, maybe that means, you know, driving a little slower. If you've been in the Dominican, you know that they play by different rules down there than we do up here. And it can be dangerous, as we've seen over the past few years. Too many players have been injured or killed in these accidents. So, you know, it even goes down to that. It's, as I said, it's not just about the baseball. It's how to handle yourself as a grown-up and accepting the responsibilities that come with that money and that fame.
Yeah, absolutely. There's computer labs. I was laughing when I was at the Astros one several years ago. The internet connection was better than anything that I would get at a lot of these spring training facilities in Florida. And there were a lot of dignitaries, like you said, and a lot of ball players, current ball players. That must have been really exciting for the people of the Dominican Republic to have those players there and to represent. I mean, there are so many of these players and their families are like royalty there. I remember when the Astros opened their academy and Moises Alou was there and some of his family members, and you forget like how revered these guys are in their native land. So it seemed like it was just a star-studded event.
Well, it was, you know, starting with the president of the country. You know, that gives you an idea of the magnitude of this kind of ceremony if the president of the country is going to show up with his entourage. But you also had Manny Mota, who's almost like the unofficial president of the country, at least on the baseball end. You know, been around so long, and then many of the Dodgers scouts that helped find players like Pedro Martinez and Raul Mondesi, you know, the long list of Dodger players, their scouts and the teachers that helped develop them. So star-studded it was, and most of the Dodger front office flew out from California. You had the baseball commissioner come in from New York. So, you know, this was not just another ribbon cutting. This one had great significance for baseball and for the Dominican Republic.
Absolutely. Okay, very interesting stuff. Thank you very much, Ken.
MLB.TV Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.TV Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.TV for details.